Hello, welcome back. Good morning, good evening, good night, whatever time it is, wherever you are. Welcome back to the best and one of the only podcasts that really explains to you or takes you through stories of day-to-day life here in China. I am Colin Thompson, your host, your moderator, your tour guide. Welcome back, and today we're going to talk about the three things that I initially, upon my initial arrival here in China, what were the three things that I really noticed the most? Before we get into that, I do want to once again remind all you listeners, if you have any questions or comments, please email to the east at oldeast.com. That is T-O-T-H-E-E-A-S-T, to the east at oldeast, O-L-I-G-Y-E.com. Please feel free to send me any feedback you have, positive or negative. We take it the same here. And any questions or comments, then I will try to answer your questions in some future podcasts. So let's get things started today. So once again, today I'm going to speak with you on the three things I initially noticed here upon my arrival here in Shenzhen, China. Well, the first thing I noticed was there is a lot of people here, man. I mean, 1.6 billion people in the country. Now, the vast majority of the population here migrated to the cities. So Shenzhen City, which is, I believe, the fourth largest city in China, has a population of about between 15 and 20 million people, depending upon the time of the year that you're here. Now, what this means is, you know, well, let me say that if you compare it to New York City has about 3/4 of its population, but they have probably about almost 5 times the area, the land space, the area mass up here in Shenzhen. So in Shenzhen, you have more people. We're trying to fit these 15 to 20 million people over about a 700 square mile area, so, which means you have people on top of you, beneath you, beside you. Everywhere you go, you're going to see people. I used to say, you know, there's not a brick or inch of New York City that hasn't been walked on, urinated on, or just everywhere in New York City pretty much has been explored. Here in Shenzhen, I can say there's not an area of Shenzhen that hasn't been, stooped on, built on. I'll probably say built on because they're ready construction here. You know, when you don't have more land, the only thing you can do is build up, build higher, or you can take land back from the sea. And in Shenzhen, every year, they take so much land back from the sea and try to build, you know, try to reclaim that land from the ocean. It's really, well, I don't want to get into that now, but it's really quite amazing knowing that where I live right now, probably 10 years ago, it was underwater, you know. It also means that if we have a big ass earthquake or hurricane, it may be back underwater again. But going back to the overall sheer size of the population here in China and in Shenzhen. So one of the questions is, you know, how do you really feel a lot of people? Well, you feel a lot of people by realizing you have no personal space in Shenzhen or in China. Now, what is personal space? Now, to me, growing up in the West, personal space pretty much means if you just draw a circle, a radius around my body, I have about a 1 foot radius around my body that I can say, this is my space, okay? If you come up to me and your nose is about 5 inches from my face, then you know what? You're my personal space. I need you to back up. I need you to get out of my personal space. I believe we have that right. It may not be in the Constitution, but I believe we have that right. It's one of the unwritten rules. You have your own personal space. Well, what I've witnessed in China, that does not exist. And primarily doesn't exist because if you only have X amount of space in a room and you have Y amount of people, then if that Y amount of people is very high, then you can't afford to give anybody the personal space. Now, I felt this by, you know, walking down the street. For example, if you're familiar with Black Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving, I'm in the U.S. and everybody goes to the shopping mall. Now, you try to walk down an aisle, even in the mall, you have to walk sideways because they're trying to dodge people. Well, imagine doing that every day here. I mean, it's quite, I don't want to say quite ridiculous, because the way they control the crowds here is very impressive. Because, like I said, you feel the crowds, but people do not have issue with you walking down the street and bumping their shoulders. You know, where I come from, you walk down the street, you bump my shoulder when we're walking, and you don't say, excuse me, I'm going to look back at you. You know, kind of like, you know, we got a problem here. In China, you can have your shoulder blade hit somebody square in the chest. Keep walking. It's not an issue here. And that's quite impressive because you don't necessarily see the altercation that you would see in the U.S. if people were walking and bumping into each other. So I will say that is impressive that people here don't necessarily get into issues. Once again, I think it's primarily due to the fact that it happens so often. If you think about a crosswalk here, a crosswalk at one of the major intersections is very reminiscent of New York City Times Square. Maybe on a 8-9 p.m. on a Friday, Saturday night, we have a massive amount of people trying to cross the street. I like to say it's ridiculous, but it's the balance, man. I mean, there are a lot of people here. And, you know, the other thing you realize, beyond just not having any personal space. Now, personal space also means if you're unfortunate enough to be on a bus, to be riding a bus, and a bus is packed up, if you've reached up to hold the, I'm not sure what they call it, but you reach up to hold on to it so as you're standing and driving, you won't fall over. You wrap your fingers around and you just hold on to it. It's on the subway. I can't remember what it's called, but your underarm may be right in somebody's grill, and you can't really do anything about it, and they're not going to do anything about it. I mean, you really, the pack buses here are quite ridiculous when you watch it. I mean, I don't know how they get the doors closed. I don't know how the people do it. They are in that bus like sardines, literally. I want to take a picture and put it up, but I don't want to go out to like a typical tourist and snap pictures, man, but it is ridiculous. I mean, I don't know how they get the doors closed. You would never see the amount of people on one bus in the U.S. because it would be a violation. If there's any sort of traffic accident, if there's any sort of fire, half of them are going to die. And it's typically what you see here in China. If you see any sort of major bus accident, most people on the bus die. And part of it is because they're overpacked. But anyway, let me not go down that road. The other thing here you see with this population is there's no privacy. Now, when I say no privacy, I mean I've been to the doctor here in the hospital several times. And there's typically lines waiting to go into the doctor's office. Now, in a separate conversation, I will share with you the experience of going to a hospital here, which is good and bad, but they're very efficient. They get people in, they get people out. Unlike the U.S., where you go to a doctor, if you say they need some blood work or x-rays, you got to go somewhere else to do that. Well, these days you do. Here in China, you get all that done same day, same time, and they'll read your records same day. So very, very quick. But if I go into a doctor's office, the next person in line is right there with me. In most cases, the doctor's door is not even closed. So I got the next person in line in the office with me, standing behind me. I could be sitting down. They're still standing right behind me. The next person in line is behind him. And I've had to actually ask the doctor to let me close the door. And they look at me very, very strange when I ask for privacy, like I'm asking them to, you know, something they've never thought about before. And quite frankly, they may not have thought about it. But, you know, the doctor will read out your, whatever your situation is, no sort of, what would it call it? No sort of privacy, nothing where the doctor says, you know, if you have an issue, it's a very private issue, he's still going to read it out in front of everybody. It's amazingly, how would I put this? I guess you could say if people here never really had privacy, they can't really complain about privacy. But coming from a culture where privacy is pretty important, it's one of the things that I didn't notice, the fact that you go to a doctor and everybody and their mother can hear your report. But overall, they do have a great way of handling the population. I want to say that, you know, they have a great way of handling lines, but you don't really see a lot of lines here in China. What you'll see is, if you think about a circle or upside down triangle, that is really the line, okay? Where people are trying to get, you have one point, and then people fan out to the sides. There is no straight line here in China. And if you try to wait in a straight line, you'll never get seen, you'll never get where you're going. What that does, though, it creates a lot of competition. So if you think about when you're a little kid trying to get that seat on the bus, or you're a little kid trying to get anything, you're really forced to be competitive. One thing here is you don't really have the same chivalry. You don't let women go ahead of you. You don't, you do let older people go ahead of you, or women that are pregnant. But beyond that, you know, a door opens or a line or a door opens, it's, you go for your own. I mean, elbows, whatever you want to do. And I've seen guys here straight just get in front of girls like it's nothing. Whereas where I come from, you would let, in certain situations, you would definitely let the woman go first. So one thing you see here is, you know, there are not a lot of lines. It's more of a mob scene. And it really does build up competition in the Chinese people. And the Chinese people are some of the most competitive people I've met in my life. Not in a sports sense, but just in a sense of they need to get ahead. They need to get that job. They need to get into that good school. And they'll do anything to get ahead. And we'll talk about that in a separate podcast. When I say anything, I mean they will do some shady stuff, man. But if you understand the culture, it's more accepted here. The last thing I want to say on just the bottom line, just the sheer amount of people who are here in China and in Shenzhen, this is a warning. If you're going to go shopping, stay away from Walmart on the weekends, okay? Do not go to Walmart on the weekends. From the sheer number of people that Walmart has employed, I believe Walmart has one or two people working each aisle, literally one or two people working each aisle, and then the amount of people going shopping on the weekends. If you go to Walmart, it's like, I can't even describe it. Yes, Walmart is like going to your state fair. People everywhere, lines everywhere. It is utterly ridiculous. I made the mistake a few times of going to Walmart on the weekends, and I quickly learned from my mistake, and I, you know, made it beeline to the exit. But do not go to Walmart on the weekends. You will be overwhelmed. Okay, you will be overwhelmed. That's all I can say about that. That was one of the first things I noticed here was the high population. Now, you see very high population, but it's not necessarily an uncomfortable environment. Like I said, they do handle the lines very well. They do handle population very well. They do things. For example, the major bus stops, there is no bus schedule here. You'll see if the bus is number 70, you'll see the same bus come every 5 minutes and pack up every 5 minutes. You just have that amount of people here. Buses run, you know, from 7 a.m. to about 11:30 at night. And like I said, if you miss the bus, don't worry. It's going to come in five minutes later. And really and truly because they have that many people who are going to be using the buses throughout the day. But once again, my first thing I noticed was just the highly populated area here. But once again, they do handle it pretty well. You know, not a lot of complaints there. But, you know, it is kind of frustrating. I'm a bigger guy here. Walking down the street and people just bumping into you and nobody ever saying excuse me, you know. But once again, I'm a guest in this country, and I'm the one who needs to really adapt. The second thing I noticed after I arrived here in China was the language. You know, I'm gonna give you a little tip here. If you want to come to China, learn how to speak Chinese. Okay, they don't speak English here. Okay, now what I mean by, well, first of all, yes, I realize that I am in a different country, and I should know the local language and not expect to be able to use English. Okay, I agree with you. Now, having said that, I grew up in the West, man. I grew up in the U.S. Of course, growing up in the U.S., we feel everyone in the world either speaks English or, damn it, they should speak English, you know? A lot of foreigners here in China get very, very mad at the Chinese people because they can't speak English. I mean, very, very mad, you know? And I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to say I haven't gotten frustrated, okay? I've never gotten mad at them because I believe being a guest in their country, it's my responsibility to learn their language, not vice versa. So I haven't gotten mad, but I have gotten frustrated just because we couldn't get to the goal. I couldn't get what I needed. I couldn't express myself as I wanted to because of that language barrier. But I can't say I've gotten mad, but several foreigners come here with the mentality that, you know, why can't you speak English? English is the global language. And I don't even know if that's true. Is English the global language? I know English is spoken in a lot of countries, but I don't know if more people in the world speak English than any other language. I would say at this point, I would doubt that. You got 1.6 billion that speak Chinese. I don't know how many people you got in the world to compare it. But anyway, I really noticed that I was going to be in trouble with my lack of Chinese when I went to 7-Eleven. Now, you go to 7-Eleven in China, and of course, you forget that you just can't say, you know, can I find some water or can I have some ice or, you know, understand nothing. So you can't even say, can I or do you know? It's you have to learn how to talk with your hands very, very quickly. After about 6 months here, with my hands, I could probably say, tomorrow I will travel to the moon and I will take a cow and a car and a book and whatever with me, okay? Something very silly, but I was able to do it with my hands because learning the language here, it's very, very complicated. I think most of you should know that in China, there are two main languages. The one you're going to hear in the majority on TV and whatnot is Mandarin. However, in Hong Kong and South China, the local language is Guangdonghua, which is Cantonese. So the Cantonese language is very much sounds different than Mandarin. Mandarin is spoken throughout all of China. And Mandarin is the, I guess you could say, the official language of the country. But like I said, if you go to Hong Kong, the local language in Hong Kong is Cantonese. And in South China, most of the people are Cantonese and they speak Cantonese as well. Now, of course, most of them speak Mandarin as well, but Cantonese is by far the more popular language in South China and in Hong Kong. So, now luckily, I lived in a part of town where you can get away with speaking English. I'm in Sheko here in Nanshan, where a lot of foreigners come, and really they come because they can get away with speaking English. Now, we say get away with speaking English because no matter what, you're going to have some frustrations because there's a level of being able to speak English and being able to speak English well. Now, once again, the onus is on us to learn the local language, but if you think about trying to do anything, if you step probably a block outside of Sheko, the area I used to live in, you're in trouble. You know, you can't go and say, do you know how I can get to this place or can I get to this place? And if you take a taxi, and here's a tip. If you take a taxi and you have to show the taxi driver on a piece of paper where you're going, well, be prepared for his ass to take you in a circle. He's going to take the long way there. It's very important that you know how to say where you're going. Even if that's the only thing you practice, know how to say you're going and he'll take you there directly. I never, never, ever give them a card and say, this is going back to the hotel, because once again, they will take you the long way around. Now, most people that come to China, well, not most people, but a lot of foreigners here may be on short-term work assignments from 6 months to a year. If you're here 6 months to a year, you're really not going to put that much into learning the language. Typically, you don't care. You're here for the opportunity. You're here to work, and you're here to have fun. You'll find your foreigner friends, and you know you're not going to really interact with the local population that well. You're not going to try to adapt to the culture that much either. So six months to a year, most people have no desire to learn. If you're here for 1 or 2 year contract, you might want to learn, but you'll probably just learn some of the basics. Let me just say this. As foreigners learning Chinese, we kill the language. I mean, we cannot say the most basic words, it's funny after being here a couple of years and you hear your foreign friends who just got here speak the language, and you say to yourself, wow, I sounded like that a few years ago. It's really eye-opening because we're killing the language. You know, I don't know how the Chinese really understand anything a foreigner says because, you know, there are four different, well, let me go back to learning, right? So 6 months to a year, no desire to learn. 1 or 2 years, you might want to learn. If you're here for 2+ years, you do plan to, I think most people I know that are here for two plus years, they want to learn the language. But there's a process we all go through, including myself. It's where you start learning language, a lot of energy, you know, a lot of time spent studying. Then you get Then you get frustrated. And then you start again. Then you quit again. Then you start again. Then you quit again. And it's really because sometimes the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And if you say three things to somebody, they're going to assume you know the language, and they're going to just start speaking fast. And you realize, you know what, I really don't know a lot. And overall, it's a very frustrating language, mainly because in Mandarin, there's a thing called tones. What that means is, I'm going to give you an example. And the tone is the emphasis or the stress or how you say the word. So M-A is ma, right? Ma. So if I just say ma, ma, very flat, that's one tone. If I say ma, like a surprise, ma, that's another tone. If I say ma, like I'm telling you to do something, ma, that's another tone. And then ma, so there are four tones. Ma, 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 ma. And to me, when I first got here, all I heard was ma, 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 all the same. Now I can recognize the different tones, but it's very hard when each different tone has multiple meanings. So you have four different ways to say ma, each ma can mean a different thing. It's very, very hard to understand the language here. Very, very hard to learn. But I am about two and a half years in on learning the language, and I'm still going. You know, I'm still going. Still motivated most of the time. I just started learning how to read and write. And you know, the funny thing is, I always tell myself, remind myself, the breakthrough happens after year four. So a lot of my foreign friends have been here for a while. They tell me the breakthrough happens, you know, year four. I hope so. I have a year and a half to go for year four as far as learning the language, and it still gets frustrating. If I had to go back, I would definitely start learning the characters and how to read and write at the same time, because those four things go together: reading, writing, speaking, and listening. You really have to be able to master all of those. What I have noticed is I'm meeting a lot of foreigners who actually took China or Chinese language as their minors in university, and now coming over here being able to speak the language. So very impressed with that, being able to speak and read. And you see them having a much more enriched time here as well. So the language was the second thing that I really noticed as being a eye-opener here. The third thing I noticed, and it was funny how I noticed this, I would say probably the end of my first week here, I was walking down the street, and I got an epiphany. I was like, you know, Colin, wait a second. You haven't seen a single black person in over a week. And I was like, wow, I didn't notice that. And it's strange because, you know, I say I didn't notice it because, you know, I mean, most middle class blacks you're going to meet in the U.S., at some point in their life, they've been the only black person either at work, on their team, or they've been in a situation where they're the only black person. So we get very used to being the only black person in a certain environment. But you can always leave and go home and see your friends and your black friends and family and whatnot. So not a big deal. I'm used to that. But this really, you know, hit me for three things here, right? The first one, not seeing anybody black in a week, I said to myself, wait a second. There are no black women here, man. How are you going to survive without sisters being around? Not only to date, but also to look at, also to, you know, have regular conversation with. You know, I mean, how are you going to do that? Coming from Washington, D.C., where there are a lot of sisters everywhere you look. The second part was just looking at from a social aspect, as far as being able to socialize with people who have commonalities of background, commonalities of experience. Of course, you can have some of this with non-blacks, but I think it's always easier. I mean, you get the jokes, you get the inside jokes. You guys like some of the same things, so it's always easier to assimilate to a new environment when you have people around you that have common or similar backgrounds. So I noticed that part. And then the third thing I noticed, and quite frankly, as a black man, I'm going to say quite maybe the most important one, was nowhere to get a haircut. There are no barbershops here to get a haircut. Now, barbershops typically in the U.S. serve two purposes. One is to get a haircut. Two is to hear whatever, I don't say gossip, but whatever was going on in the community, talk about sports. You know, if you had a good barbershop, you know, you hang out there for about an hour, some guy would come in and try to sell you some stuff. So it's also a social activity, getting your hair cut. Now, there are no barbershops here. Well, there are a lot of barbershops here in Shenzhen, but there are no barbershops here for black men, for black hair. So it creates a very, very challenging task to get a haircut. Now, my first year and a half, 2 years here, I was going from, you know, feast to famine. I was cutting my hair bald and letting it grow back for about a month and cutting it bald. Letting it grow back for a month and cut it bald. No fades, no temple tape, none of that kind of stuff, you know. It's either feast or famine. I since then learned I can go to Hong Kong because Guangzhou and Hong Kong have a lot of Africans. So now if I need to get a haircut, I can go to Hong Kong and get the haircut. Now, it's not too convenient. It's not too bad, though. I mean, from my door to the barbershop, it's probably about a two hours round trip, which is not too bad if you need a haircut. But, you know, it's a little bit too much going to Hong Kong just to get a haircut. But it works out. You got to do what you got to do. So, You know, the other thing about being in an environment where you don't see a lot of African Americans or blacks is that you get treated a little different from the Chinese people. Now, most Chinese people, well, back in 2008, this was the case. Now, in 2011, it's a little better. Yeah, I'll say it's a lot better. One, you get stared at. You get people looking at you like you wouldn't believe. I think I talked about this before, but you get people looking at you like you wouldn't believe. Just staring you down. Most people that I meet assumed I was from Africa because in 2008 and 2009, although they love NBA basketball and Kevin Garnett and Michael Jordan and Obama, a lot of people just did not know that you can be black and come from the United States. I remember telling somebody I was black from Canada and the United States. They told me, no, you're lying. You're black. You can't be. Now, needless to say, I was very, very pissed. And you'll hear very ignorant comments like that here. But you have to remember that in a lot of cases, you're the first black person somebody's actually ever talked to. Maybe not seen, but ever talked to. So they have a lot of questions. And, you know, in the northern part of the country, you have a lot of Africans. There are a lot of Africans here in China. But, of course, they get the bad reputation. The media plays it. The blacks in Africa are very, very hungry. They're very, very poor. So they come here, you know, looking for work, taking jobs, overstaying their visa. So a lot of negative stereotypes still surrounding blacks here. The other funny thing is a lot of older men want to touch my skin. So, and they'd come up to me, stand beside me, and just touch my skin and touch my hair, right? And it was funny at first, you know. It's funny at first, but you get kind of tired of it after. You get kind of tired after a while. But like I said, you have to learn very quickly not to take things personal here. One funny thing is these boys, you know, teenage boys or boys maybe in their early to mid-20s, would come ask me to take a picture with their girlfriend. I'm like, wow, you don't do, you know, you don't do that where I come from. I mean, you don't, you know. You take the picture, you know. One of my guys here, he said whenever that happens, he'll always squeeze the girl's butt when they're taking a picture. I won't do that. But he's funny. He said he does that, and the girl never gets mad at him. It's very strange. Anyway, but you have to be careful taking pictures with anybody here because once you take a picture with one person, the lines form, and then everybody wants you to take a picture. You could be there 5 minutes. You could be there 10 minutes taking pictures. So you have to be very, very... You have to look out first. If you do it, you got to do it quick and keep it moving. Now, I will give you an embarrassing experience that I had here being black. I run a lot of races. I run, you know, anywhere from 5Ks to marathons. And whenever I go to a race here in China, they assume I'm African. They assume I'm one of those fast guys, man. And this was embarrassing because I feel like I'm letting my race down. I'm, you know, when I first got to China, I was all of 207 pounds, you know, 6 feet, 207, I had a lot of muscle. Now, I'm 6 feet, probably about like 195, but they assume that I'm fast. So they want me to go up to the front of the race, they want to take pictures of me before the race, and I'm saying to myself, oh my gosh, once that gun goes off, and they realize that I am not fast. Well, I think I'm fast, but I'm not fast compared to the real African runners who those boys smoke, you know, doing marathons and in 2 hours, 20 minutes. Man, I need almost 4 hours to do a marathon. Anyway, so I always feel very, very bad once they realize, and you can see a look on their face when they realize that you're not one of the elite runners because now you made their race famous. But the other side of that is almost every race that I've done here in Shenzhen or throughout China, I have been interviewed. I've been asked a lot of questions about where I come from, about, you know, a lot of different things. So my face has been out there. But overall, that's the third thing that really impacted me being here. Now, since then, I have met a lot more African Americans, a lot more blacks. But still, I can still go, you know, 2-3 months, 2-4 months without seeing another black woman. A brother now, I'll see another brother probably one every 2 weeks, unless I'm hanging out with my boys. But beyond that, it's far and few between. And it's okay, you get used to it. So to wrap up here, so the three things that I really noticed upon my initial arrival here in China. One, highly populated country, and I learned how the population feels. Well, I learned what it feels like to live in a highly populated area. The language and the need to really understand some language. You have to have some emergency words that you definitely understand, like with the bathroom. And then the lack of black people. Now, I've since gotten past, I've since gotten used to all of these three things. But once again, when I first got here, those are the things that really stood out to me the most. So that's going to be the end of this podcast. My next podcast, I'm going to share my story of my arrival in Hong Kong airport ordeal. I already recorded that one. I'm going to just play that one. I'm not going to re-record it, so it's going to be a little rougher than this one. But I think you'll enjoy it. Once again, Colin Thompson, podcast to the East My Brother podcast. Any comments or questions, please email me at toTheEast@OLIGYE.com. toTheEast@OLIGYE.com. This is Colin Thompson, thanking you for joining, listening to the podcast. Please feel free to share this with your friends, colleagues, whoever. I can never have too many fans. One fan is not too many fans. All right. Anyway, thank you, and I'll talk to you next time. Peace.